We're discussing issues before the PSC, Wisconsin's Public Service Commission, the independent regulatory agency for public utilities. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. First, some history. Wisconsin was one of the first states to regulate public utilities more than a century ago through the 1907 Public Utilities Law. Now, fast forward to today, the three-person PSC is responsible for regulating more than 1,100 Wisconsin public utilities. What questions do you have for the PSC chair? Have your utility bills been going up? Have you had help in the pandemic to pay for electricity, to pay for water? What is internet speed like in your area? We'll start there, 800-642-1234. Rebecca Cameron Vaak is chairperson of the Wisconsin Public Service Commission. Commissioner Vaak, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me again, Kate.
Well, before we trace the money going into broadband build-out, give us the lay of the land. How is Wisconsin doing? How many people aren't getting high-speed internet?
Well, Kate, you know, we're coming off of an incredibly productive 2021. I'm sure, as you know, Governor Evers declared 2021 to be the year of broadband, and we really haven't stopped working on this. At the beginning of the year, our best estimate was that approximately 650,000 Wisconsin residents still lacked access to the physical infrastructure. So when we talk about broadband, it's really that three-legged stool. It's access to the infrastructure, it's affordability, and it's adoption. We can't forget about adoption, things like digital literacy and the availability of devices. So we know that about 650,000 residents still lacked access. And we also know, based on a recent study, that same number, so an additional 650,000 residents, didn't have access because they couldn't afford it. So while we have made incredibly great strides, we will have brought expanded or improved service to over 300,000 Wisconsin homes and businesses. We know that there is still work to do.
We're going to dig deeper into affordability and adoption in just a bit. But I want to ask you, how do you know these numbers? How good is your data?
Well, our data is only as good as our broadband office team and the expertise that they carry. They do yeoman's work in terms of digging down deeper than the information that's been made available to us from the FCC. We know that the FCC numbers are, low, and we know that they understate the number of people who are served. And so we've been for years collecting voluntary data from telecommunications providers, and then our state broadband staff takes the time to map those data points that they're getting voluntarily to try to get a more fulsome picture of coverage in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, let's look at the dollars flowing into Wisconsin. First, there was CARES dollars, then we've got ARPA, American Rescue Plan Act dollars, and you're looking at millions upon millions of dollars in projects. How do you know where to put this funding?
Well, with the American Rescue Plan Act funds, we had to follow the guidance that came from the Treasury Department. So that guidance was a little bit different than the statutes that govern our state broadband expansion grant program. So going into that $100 million round, that's the round that we just awarded those projects in October, we knew that the focus was on fiber. And we knew, based on the guidance from Treasury, that there was also a focus on smaller cooperatives, which isn't something that we typically see in a normal grant round. But the ARPA funds allowed us to really be targeted and make sure that the smaller co-ops had access to fiber, which we all know is sort of the gold standard.
Well, on top of the ARPA funds, the Biden administration is directing billions into expanding broadband access through the bipartisan infrastructure law. And this really dovetails with what Governor Evers pushed for at the start of this year, calling 2021 the year of broadband access. Let's recall what he said.
It's 2021, folks. Having access to high-speed internet is no longer a luxury. It's a necessity. Every Wisconsinite across our state should have access to reliable, high-speed internet, period.
So he made no bones about that. But is Wisconsin ready to handle the influx of federal funds for expanding high-speed internet?
Absolutely, we are. And we are in a position to handle that influx because of the success of our statewide broadband expansion grant program. So we have been able to really hit the ground running because of the infrastructure that we have in place when it comes to understanding how to target dollars to ensure that broadband infrastructure is going exactly where it's needed. And the influx of dollars that will be coming from the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, we know that it's going to be at least another $100 million. But we also are waiting for guidance from NTIA. That's the federal agency that has to issue rules and instructions on how those dollars can be used. But as we touched on briefly at the beginning of the hour, we have a pretty good idea that a part of that infrastructure package of dollars is going to include funding for digital equity and broadband affordability. Because as the governor mentioned, and as everybody knows, access to affordable, reliable, high performance broadband isn't a luxury. It's a necessity for everybody to be able to participate in everyday life.
Becky Cameron Vock with us, chairperson and commissioner for the Wisconsin Public Service Commission. You can join in. What questions do you have for the leader of Wisconsin's Public Utility Authority? What do you want the chair of the PSC to know? How is internet for you and your family? What is the situation in your area? 800-642-1234. On the point of affordability and adoption, the Digital Equity Act from Congress, it addresses affordability and access, digital literacy that you've been talking about, and requires each state to start an organization responsible for putting together a digital equity plan, which again helps to distribute all these grants that we're seeing. Who is doing that piece in Wisconsin?
So we've been looking at this since the talks began on the Infrastructure Act. So we've been hard at work listening to multitude of webinars coming out of Washington, D.C. in order to figure out what should be a part of our plan. So our state broadband office has been working on a plan to attack digital equity and access since the infrastructure bill talks have begun. And so I'm very confident that we will have a really robust plan in place when we finally receive those rules from NTIA.
Some states do have a dedicated statewide office for broadband where that's all the people work on. We've had a task force to study it here in Wisconsin. What about needing a standalone government agency or department that is dedicated to this work in the public's best interest?
Well, I mean, we do have that, right? It's the state broadband office that's a part of the PSC. And the members of that state broadband office, that is all they do.
Okay.
So there is no, you know, they're not also working on things like the siting of a solar generating facility. These are professionals whose careers are dedicated to all issues around broadband.
One issue that households have also been facing is this issue with throttling, that deliberate slowing of internet speed by your internet provider. I'm wondering, how much do you hear about data bandwidth throttling?
We hear about it fairly often. You know, in the last go round, the governor had included a provision in his proposed budget that would have increased broadband consumer protections, along with pricing transparency. Unfortunately, that didn't make it through to the final budget, but we do hear on a fairly regular basis stories from customers about data throttling and price transparency, right? You get the flyer in the mail, it says you're going to get up to 25.3 in terms of speed, and then you do your speed check and it's mm-hmm. nowhere near those levels. Unfortunately, right now, as we sit here, we don't have enough consumer protections in place for the providers of broadband. And that's not to say that all of the providers are bad actors. It's just that since the deregulation of the telecommunications industry, you know, about 11 years ago, we still don't have consumer protections in place for those types of activities.
Let's bring on a call now. Paul joining us in Madison. Hi, Paul.
Hi there. Thank you.
Hi, go ahead.
I was just wondering how regular folks can access these grant monies. What forms do we need to put in, or who do we need to talk to? I have a small project in mind for setting up a wireless internet service provider for low-income residents here in Madison, but I'm not sure how to actually go forward with accessing these grants.
That's a great question. So if you go to the PSC's website, which is psc.wi.gov, we have a page that is dedicated to the broadband office. And on that page, you will see all the information available for the grant process. And we also have a couple of webinars coming up. You can find information on those webinars on our website.
And your broadband office is holding a webinar tomorrow, actually, I saw, for the broadband expansion grants at 2 to discuss these grant opportunities.
Yes, that's correct.
We're talking with Becky Cameron-Vock, chair of the Wisconsin PSC Public Service Commission. You can join in. What utility challenges does your community face? How do you want the PSC to address it? What do you want the PSC to prioritize or take away on renewables, which we're going to get to next? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. Wisconsin is working to transition to a carbon-free energy by 2050. We're looking at the role of the Public Service Commission in this transition to renewables. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We talked in recent weeks about Wisconsin's first ever clean energy plan that's in the works. Almost 9 months ago, the PSC opened an investigation for its roadmap to zero carbon electricity generation. What's been your experience using solar or wind? Do you believe Wisconsin can be carbon-free in less than 30 years? What portion of your overall budget is going to utility costs? Join in 800-642-1234. Becky Cameron-Vock, chair of the PSC, with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's bring on another caller before we go to renewables. Eric is joining us from Somerset. Eric, hi.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Go ahead.
A quick question. We have a monopoly here in Somerset, Wisconsin for the phone and internet. Right now we have DSL, but we do have fiber optic options. But in order to gain that fiber optic service, you have to pay $3 per foot to get the service to your house to gain fiber optics. Now, is there going to be any kind of grant money or anything where that'll offset the cost at least for maybe 100 feet? I mean, I understand if you have a 10-acre lot, that'll be a big expense for the phone company. But if you only have a 3-acre lot, which is standard, and it's only 150 feet off the where the mm-hmm. fiber optic is, that should be covered by, you know, in order to get the service. That's a big cost.
Eric, thank you. Commissioner.
Yep, it's a common frustration, unfortunately, that we hear about. Again, we had proposed that in the budget to have a pot of dollars set aside for that exact reason. That unfortunately didn't get through into the final budget, but we're hopeful that with the infrastructure dollars that we will be able to target some of the dollars for exactly that type of extension, because we do hear about that more often than you'd think. And I completely understand the frustration, but as it sits right now, we don't have funds that can be used for that type of private extension.
Eric, thank you for the call. I want to turn to renewables now. The proportion of electricity the U.S. gets from solar and wind nearly quadrupled between 2011 and 2020. That's a new study out by the Environment America Research and Policy Center. But Wisconsin is really lagging, 25th in wind power growth and 37th in solar power growth in that time frame. Do you think our state's transition to renewables is going too slow?
I don't. I think we are going to go through this transition one time in our generation, and we need to do it correctly, or we risk having the lights be off, and nobody wants that. So I think that we need to be extremely deliberate, and we need to be thoughtful and responsible, and we always have to keep our eye on reliability. We have approved 18 solar facilities since 2019, and that's going to add over 2,100 megawatts of solar generation, which is pretty incredible when you stop to think about it. And as you know, Kate, all of Wisconsin's investor-owned utilities have committed to zero carbon by 2050. And that's why we opened the docket that you mentioned at the top of this segment, because as I said, we're only going to go through this transition one time. So it's really important that we get it right. And in the state of Wisconsin, we don't have integrated resource planning, which is fairly common in other parts of the country. And that gives utility commissions the ability to take a holistic view of their utilities generation planning. We did away with that in Wisconsin. We used to have the advanced plan, and that law was abolished. So in one sense of the word, we at the commission are left looking at these projects in silos because we don't have that grand integrated resource plan from each of our utilities. So I get all the time that, you know, there are a number of people who think we're not moving fast enough. I will tell you there is an equal number of people who think that we are moving too quickly. I happen to think that what's in the best interest of the state of Wisconsin is taking that middle approach, which is why I was in favor of opening that roadmap to zero carbon to make sure that we're not missing anything along the way. And to really explore the ability to use things like performance-based regulation to look at how do we modernize our energy efficiency program to align with carbon reduction goals. And really, how can we be more thoughtful and deliberate when we're looking at affordability challenges? Because we know that the transition has a price tag associated with it. And so there are a lot of moving pieces, and we need to make sure that we're doing this responsibly and that we're doing it deliberately.
And threading it all together, because these projects seem to come through piecemeal, one at a time, one here, one there. And it sounds like it's really hard to kind of figure out what is the grand vision here and what is that return on making sure that these projects do deliver.
Right. Exactly. So we are, that is at the core of the roadmap docket. You know, we'd like to see more transparent utility planning. We'd like to see additional information. And we're going to seek that in our next strategic energy assessment. That is the one tool that we have here in the state where we're able to collect information. And we're just going to be more targeted about the information that we collect and that we analyze to make sure that we're not missing anything and that we're threading that needle appropriately and that we're not leaving any customers behind.
Becky Cameron-Vock, chair of the Wisconsin PSC. Let's go to Jeremy now in Racine. Jeremy, hi, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm in the process of getting estimates in regards to putting solar on my home, and I'm coming. It's a lot more extensive information that I have to go through before I even make the decision. One of the reasons I'm worried about pulling that trigger is I hear We Energies owns the rights to generate power within my area. How does one go about getting around that? Is there some kind of permit that you have to acquire? You know, and the other thing I have is affordability. Is there any grants coming in the future to help homeowners maybe transition partial solar on their homes to reduce their carbon footprint and generate their own electricity?
Great question, Jeremy. Thank you.
That's a really great question. I do know that with the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, there are a number of programs that will direct dollars to our state energy office related to energy efficiency and state or in energy programs. And I'm wondering if maybe there would be funding for the residential population, but I'm not sure about that. On the second question, the administrative code PSC 119 contains Wisconsin's interconnection rules. Those are the rules that govern how a residential customer can connect to their utilities distribution system if they want to install their own generation. There's currently some lawsuits that are pending about those rules. There's legislation that's pending right now, legislation that has been put forward that would allow residential customers to enter into a leasing financing arrangement in order to try to make the cost of that solar panel less expensive. So that legislation is pending, but currently it's governed by PSC 119, and I would encourage any customer who's looking at wanting to site their own generation to take a look at our commission website. And I want to put out there, Kate, that we are also always available as a resource.
And we're out of time. Thank you for joining us. News Update is next on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Homelessness across Wisconsin increased during the pandemic. Officials say unsheltered homelessness has become the main challenge. And with winter here, cities are racing to find solutions. Diane Bazooka reports on what Madison is doing to get people sheltered.
In a typical year, Ben Jackson says he might connect with 230 unsheltered people in Madison.
The reason they enclose their stuff like this is to try and protect their stuff from being stolen.
He does outreach for a homelessness nonprofit called Porchlight. But last year, that number soared to about 600.
As the pandemic started pushing people out of their jobs, suddenly you had people that had never camped outside, just basically out on the street and, you know, really kind of lost.
Many of those people ended up in city parks. In Madison's Rheindahl Park, an encampment formed that had nearly 100 residents this summer. In response to drug use, crime, and community complaints, the city turned to an industrial site on Madison's southeast side as an alternative. There, on a two-acre lot, they've built what looks like a tiny subdivision of ice fishing shanties.
One of the reasons that Rheindahl Park has proven to be so problematic is because there was very little structure around the use of that park.
Jim O'Keefe is Madison's community development director.
So what we're trying to do out at Dairy Drive is to provide a setting that is everything that Rheindahl Park was not.
For 2 years, Dairy Drive will have around-the-clock staffing and on-site services. But there's only room for 30 people, and many of Rheindahl Park's residents don't want to go. Jamie Goodyear moved to the park with her boyfriend in August when they used the last of their savings to buy a tent.
I don't want to live somewhere where it's literally tinier than the tent we already have. Nope, I don't want to.
Her boyfriend, Anthony Kudingo, recently got a job near Rheindahl Park. Like many residents, he's concerned about the remote location of the new encampment.
Dairy Drive is too far away. They don't have any transportation lined up to help us. We don't have no services out there. There's not a food truck out there. There's just nothing out there at Dairy Drive for us.
Instead, Jamie and Anthony are moving into a hotel near Rheindahl Park. The city is using COVID funding to pay for 35 hotel rooms through June. In fact, federal COVID funds have allowed providers to try new things throughout the pandemic. They've rented hotel rooms for families and vulnerable individuals, opened new emergency shelters, and provided rent assistance to prevent homelessness. Joe Volk, executive director of the Wisconsin Coalition Against Homelessness, says it offered a glimpse of what is possible.
It was kind of like almost a golden era of stuff that we always knew needed to happen, resources that we knew needed to be there, but never had the funding to be able to put those into place.
Pandemic innovations were effective. At the start of this year, Milwaukee had a record low number of unsheltered people. But Volk says once people were in shelters or treatment programs, the next link in the chain was still missing.
Even with the resources to move people into housing, there's no housing to be had. There's literally, physically, not enough low-income housing in the state to house all the people that need housing.
Wisconsin has one of the lowest housing vacancy rates in the nation. And when new affordable housing is built, it's usually priced for households earning around $40,000. But there are few options for the lowest earners. And Volk says this creates a pipeline to the shelter system.
you can have services forever and short-term housing, such as shelters or motels forever, but ultimately you've got to move people into housing that they can afford.
There's little indication that the state is willing to invest the resources necessary to meet this need, and federal aid is running out. So temporary solutions like Dairy Drive are likely to remain a big and increasingly expensive part of Wisconsin's response to homelessness. Diane Bazuga, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And now to Beloit as we continue our conversations with mayors from all over Wisconsin. It's a community that calls itself the Gateway to Wisconsin, situated near the junction of interstates on the southern border above northern Illinois. Beloit's population is just shy of 37,000. The new U.S. Census figures show a city that shrunk ever so slightly by a few hundred people since the 2010 census. Do you live in Beloit? What are pressing issues? What can other cities learn from Beloit? It's 800-642-1234. Lori Luther has been city manager since 2015. Lori, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so very much for having me this morning.
Well, a bit of parlance here. We've been talking to mayors from around Wisconsin. You're a city manager. Can you explain the difference?
Yes, thank you. So city managers became a profession really as part of the progressive era. And we are appointed by the city council to implement their policies. City managers were a response to the political bosses back in the day that were highly corrupt. I am from Kansas City originally, so if you've heard about the Pendergast bosses in the Kansas City area, city managers were a response to that political machine. And we are nonpartisan, we are neutral, and we are trained specifically in all of the nuances of city government, be it finance, budgeting, public works and engineering. Although I am not an engineer, I have been trained in enough of the concepts so that I can oversee those functions.
And so you report to the city council?
Correct. In Beloit, we have 7 members who are elected at large, and they hired me to be the professional city manager to manage the day-to-day operations.
So is being a city manager easier than being a mayor?
Well, I would tell my friends who are mayors, and I have many, that I am never want to be confused with the elected officials. And that is a different kind of responsibility. I would say both functions, serving as the CEO of the governing corporation, have a unique challenges, but I always want to clarify that I am not an elected official. I am appointed by the elected officials to implement their policies.
Some carefully chosen words there. Well, I want to look at where you are situated, which is really interesting, on the border of Illinois, which legalized marijuana for recreational use at the start of last year. How has that affected life in Beloit at all?
You know, living in Beloit, I can tell you that I really haven't noticed any significant differences. City Hall itself is literally right on the border of South Beloit, Illinois. And, you know, we can walk right over the state line. We're right, we're that close to the border. But we really have not noticed a dramatic shift in Beloit proper.
Earlier this year, Beloit hired Andre Sales, a new police chief. What is the city doing to address racism in policing?
I am so proud of the work that the Beloit Police Department has done over the years. First of all, the selection of Chief Sales. He is a phenomenal individual, an excellent leader, and I am proud to be working with him. He previously served on the city's recruitment team for the police department. So he's been working to diversify our department so that we're more reflective of the community here in Beloit, which is highly diverse. And I think with him in the leadership position, it really has helped us continue that mission. And we've been very fortunate while all communities, I think, are seeking to hire police officers these days. We've had large recruitment pools and really great candidates. So far, that has been looking great. And, you know, it is a constant work in progress. You can never check a box and say that you've achieved, because facing and fighting racism is a daily battle. But I think that we have made meaningful progress. And, you know, given the fact that we had implemented all of the 21st century policing policy recommendations years ago, I think put us in an excellent position.
But here's the thing. Police departments all over the country and here in Wisconsin are struggling to attract new officers and to retain veteran officers. Are you saying that isn't an issue in Beloit?
I think that we have less of an issue than many of our neighbors. So it is a constant recruitment process, so you can never stop. But I think that we have seen good numbers in our most recent recruitment pool. And so that is very promising. We have a 10-hour shift in Beloit, and that is very attractive for a lot of individuals. It enables every police officer to have just about every other weekend off, the way the days rotate. And having that work-life balance, particularly in law enforcement these days, is a wonderful asset that we can use when we're doing our recruitment.
Speaking of recruitment, beyond policing, here we are in the Great Resignation. People are moving all over the place, and hiring is very difficult. What are you finding out along those lines in Beloit?
So we face those challenges as well, and it is incredibly difficult. What we are seeking to do is to use internships and begin to grow our own. Mechanics these days really are in such high demand, and we've had a really difficult time filling those vacant positions. So we are working with an intern now, and you know, you're seeing employers more willing to pay for educational opportunities to make it possible to fill those positions. But it is a challenge we continue to face, and I think that may be the new normal.
Is that internship like an apprenticeship model? This is paid, and it's gradually learning the tools of the trade?
You know, it's interesting that you frame it that way. We didn't call it an apprenticeship, but in many ways it is based on that model. It is a paid position, and this individual is also seeking additional education. And so they can grow with us, if you will, as they learn those additional skills.
We have Beloit City Manager Lori Luther with us explaining issues that she takes on in her city in southern Wisconsin, just above the Illinois border. Can walk across what issues in Beloit deserve more attention. Have you taken in a minor league baseball game at the new ABC Supply Stadium? What do you think? What other amenities should cities pursue? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Lori Luther here on the Ideas Network. We're in conversation with city leaders from all over Wisconsin here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Today it's Beloit at the junction of the Rock River and Turtle Creek near the Illinois border in Rock County. And according to the Wisconsin Historical Society, I was reading, the origin of Beloit's name is disputed, but it seems that the name came from a French word meaning handsome ground. What should we know about Beloit? Have you struggled to find housing? What do you think of the city's new police chief, what they can accomplish? Join in 800-642-1234. City Manager Lori Luther with us for about 9 more minutes. I understand that development in Beloit is booming even despite the pandemic. What is underway, Lori?
So we have seen exceptional growth over the past 2 years. We are seeing increases in all types of housing. We are seeing industrial growth. We had the Amazon distribution center open in 2020. And it's just amazing how much development is happening. So really our biggest challenge as a staff is keeping up with all of those proposals coming through and making sure that we maintain our commitment to really have an easy and fast development approval process.
Has the Amazon Distribution Center been a good business partner for the community? What have you seen out of them?
So what I think is the best thing about them coming last year is that they had jobs available at a time when they were really desperately needed. And so I think, you know, having, you know, 1,500 jobs become available at just that time during the pandemic truly was a blessing for our community. I know that they continue to struggle to hire enough employees. And that's what we're hearing across the board from all of our employers, is that getting enough staff continues to be a challenge pretty much across the board.
Is that due to, what is that due to? Is that just due to the economics of the situations we're seeing right now with people moving from jobs or staying back out of the workforce? What do you think is going on in Beloit's situation?
You know, it's difficult to say, but I believe that people are able or have chosen as in light of the pandemic to be very selective about their work and those options. And so I think all of the employers are competing for those eligible individuals. And to some degree, it's a population issue. So that said, we are also sensitive to a segment of the population that is telling us that they aren't able to find jobs. And so I think there is still work to be done on helping people become more prepared for job readiness and to be able to enter into those positions. So I think there's work to be done on both ends.
You mentioned housing, that housing is going up in Beloit, but there is a housing crunch all over the place. Affordable housing, one of the really difficult things for many communities. What is demand for housing like in Beloit?
Demand is very high. And like other communities, we are seeing developers build, and those structures, whether they are multifamily, single family, executive style, affordable housing, all levels of housing, it seems all are in demand. And as soon as it's built, they're filled. So we don't see the demand slowing down anytime soon. And it is a challenge. I would have to say that right now, housing is one of the very highest priorities for the city at large.
Okay, so this is housing starts, new housing going up around Beloit. What are you doing about the old housing stock and the historical housing stock? Because Beloit is an old city, and I know that you would probably have a lot of this older housing stock.
You're absolutely correct. And one of the things the city does is it promotes a loan program for improvements to existing homes. So to help stabilize neighborhoods and make those options available, that can be, those are funds that can be used for lead remediation or for other improvements that are needed to homes. So that has been an underutilized program. So we definitely want to give a shout out that is available. And absolutely, stabilizing neighborhoods is incredibly important to us. And the city also picks up properties on foreclosure. And we work with an organization called Axe Housing. They're actually located first in Milwaukee, and now they have a branch in Beloit. And they help families that are low income purchase homes and then rehab them and build their own equity. So that's a great program that we have in Beloit as well.
We're talking with Lori Luther, who is Beloit City Manager, a role she has also had in Waukesha and Reedsburg, as we discuss pressing issues with city leaders all over Wisconsin. Do you live in Beloit? What do you think of how the city has weathered the pandemic? What can other communities learn from Beloit? Join in at 800-642-1234. Lori, Beloit benefits from having billionaire Diane Hendricks as one of its residents, who has invested millions upon millions in the city. How does the city ensure that the projects and initiatives are in the vision of the city, if you will, and not catering to a single person's wishes?
That is a very interesting question. I think that we've been incredibly fortunate that the Hendricks family of companies really are community minded, and they have been very forward thinking in how their developments can help build community. The best example of that is the ABC Supply Stadium located in downtown Beloit. It's a $38 million facility that received no city financing or incentives other than we provided the land for it to be constructed on. And so having that development as a community center and really to do so much more than baseball. They had movie nights, and we see nonprofits. It really, I think, in the future is going to help us build community. And that kind of development is, in my opinion, the best kind to have.
In the seconds we have left, I want to turn to federal pandemic aid and what is the city using its aid for, how much you've received?
The city stands to receive $15.2 million. We received half of it already. And unlike some communities, Beloit is being very slow and deliberate and not rushing to spend those dollars. They have not yet been allocated because we recognize this is a once in a lifetime, once in a career, once in a opportunity that we need to be very strategic about how those funds are allocated. And so we anticipate in 2022, really looking at additional process and being very public and transparent about how those funds are allocated.
Lori, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so very much for having me. It was my pleasure.
Lori Luther has been the city manager of Beloit since 2015. Which city leader should we meet with next? Suggest your mayor by completing a 2-question form at WPR.org/mornings. Just provide your name and a brief explanation about why your mayor should be on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.